206 of the Cricket Hell Weekly. How was skiing, Sid?
It was good, thank you. I still kept abreast of the cricket, though. You'll be pleased to know I did my job.
Good. So we have had 9 matches so far in the second edition of the WPL, and it has largely gone to form so far, hasn't it, in terms of what we were talking about last week?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've got the Mumbai Indians on top. They did suffer a shock defeat to UP Warriors. Grace Harris is having quite a good WPL, and she had one of her good games then. She also bowled very well as making some runs at the end. But, you know, we've got Mumbai Indians, Delhi Capitals on top.
Yep.
UP Warriors kind of sitting in the middle. Royal Challengers Bangalore have got a couple of wins under their belt, but they're a couple of the easier games, and they don't look anything like as good a team. And then Gujarat Giants, well, the less said about that, the better.
Oh, dear.
It reads played 3-1, none. Gujarat Giants are still in it. They've still got a chance of qualification. It's still in their own hands. If they lose today, in today's game, it's out of their own hands, but they still could potentially qualify. You only need to make third spot. So you don't even need to make the top half of the table, technically, to qualify.
But we are thinking that what we said last week about the same teams dominating is probably accurate.
Okay. Yeah.
And Alice Capsey has had a good week. Well, it started off not particularly great because she got wallet for 6 bowling the final over. It was the last ball of the game.
They needed 5 and she got hit for 6. I mean, but she'd had a good game before that.
She'd
hit runs and she'd been trusted with that last over. She took a couple of wickets in that last over. If that last ball had gone for 4 and not 6, she'd have been the hero. But, you know, fine margins in cricket. But she came back and, you know, it's her second best ever score in top level cricket, so either for England or in top level franchise cricket. Her best was a WBBL game where she hit 80, but she got 75. And, you know, she looks in fantastic form, so that's really great news for England.
Yeah, definitely. Really exciting. There's been, in terms of selections, there's been a couple of kind of sort of slightly interesting ones. So let's stick with the England perspective for a minute, because Danny Wyatt hasn't played. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, so she's been kept out of the side. Well, it's been, as we think we mentioned last week at UP Warriors, the problem is that you've got Sophie Eccleston, who you're never going to leave out of a side. You know, nobody would dispute that she's the best bowler in the world. And then your captain, Alyssa Healy, your captain and your wicketkeeper, you're obviously not going to leave her out either, which means all the other overseas are fighting over those one more spot for the overseas. So 3 overseas fighting for 1 spot. Tally McGrath was the kind of player in possession there. And that was kind of an interesting one as well, because it's like, you know, Tally McGrath is the Australian vice-captain.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's not looking in great nick. You're asking Alyssa Healy, the Australian captain, to drop her international vice-captain.
Yeah.
That's quite a hard ask to do. But they did actually do it in the end. You know, they concluded, presumably between Alyssa Healy and John Lewis, they concluded that, you know, they needed to make the change. So they brought in Chamari Asipattu. She's obviously in great form as well and offers a bit more with the ball, potentially, than Danny Wyatt. So Danny Wyatt's had to sit on the sidelines. I mean, I guess that the thing is that if UP Warriors go on a big winning streak, then Danny Wyatt's probably not going to get a game. If they go on a losing streak, then she might well get brought in instead of Chamari to see if they can check things up, but that won't be much fun position to be in. So
yeah, it's a tricky one, obviously. Because
is she going to wish that...
Yeah, she could end up wishing that she'd gone to New Zealand with the rest of the England squad, because obviously as it stands, she could potentially be sitting on the bench, okay, earning a bit more money, but then there are quite a few openers knocking around the England camp at the moment who will be very happy to try and take her spot from under her nose. So it's a tricky position that she's been put in.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. Anyway, but, you know, overall, we've really enjoyed WPL, and it's been, you know, it's great to have that appointment to view every afternoon, and we can't wait for this afternoon's game. First thing I did when I got back from my skiing holiday was turned on the WPL game.
You did, Sid. Well done. And it's colder here in England than it was skiing, isn't it?
It is.
Now, keeping with the theme of franchise cricket, there's been a big announcement about the 100 this week. So the teams have announced which players they're retaining. So in the women's competition, they could retain up to 8 players. So it's much less churn than we saw last year when the draft was kind of much bigger and there was just a much bigger turnover. So I think the ECB are probably happier with where we're at in terms of the balance of the sides, and have decided that therefore they don't need to rejig things. as much as they did last year. Were there any particular surprises to you, Sid, in terms of players who weren't retained?
Yeah, well, I mean, there were a couple of surprises, weren't there? I mean, a couple of the big names that we've seen that are going to be in that draft and potentially moving elsewhere. Amelia Kerr, who's currently, carving it up in the WPL.
She is.
Really proving in this year's WPL again that she's really developed into a genuine all-rounder. And I have to say, I didn't see that in her future when she first came onto the scene, but she's batting really well and showing that she can do that really consistently. So she's going to be in the draft, not playing for London Spirit next year necessarily. Or of course, London Spirit could still buy her back in the draft. And Amy Jones, the big kind of England name that is going to be in the draft.
Yeah.
Now, the big thing to remember here, guys, is that the players had a chance to say no to being retained. So just because somebody has gone into the draft, that doesn't mean that their team didn't want to retain them. So it could well be that London Spirit said to Amelia Kerr, "We want to retain you." And Amelia Kerr said, "No, thank you. I want to move on somewhere else." And there are a few different reasons why she might have done that.
Yeah, it could be that she didn't like that team environment and she wanted to go somewhere else because Spirit haven't been particularly successful in the 100. It could also be, couldn't it, Sid, because she was on a band 2 salary last year. She might think, and London Spirit might have said, "We'll retain you at a band 2 salary." And she might have gone, "Well, I think that I'll try for a band 1 salary somewhere else."
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I think she's got a good chance of that, to be honest. She's going to be one of the interesting ones in the draft. And Amy Jones, it could well be similar. And I've got a little theory. There's no inside knowledge behind this, I should say. A little theory. I reckon, looking at what other teams have retained and what other places are available, I reckon that the Rockets have had a quiet word with Amy Jones. And they've gone, "We need a wicketkeeper. We're going to give you..." They've got... The Rockets are the one team that have got a band A slot available and have no wicketkeeper. So I reckon the Rockets have had a word, gone, if you pull out of Phoenix, we'll give you a band A contract, 50,000, and you can come and be our wicketkeeper. So you heard it here
first.
No inside information there, so...
The other one that Spirit obviously have chosen not to retain or potentially has gone elsewhere, Lauren Filer. Despite having picked up her first England contract, the England captain, who's also the London Spirit captain, decided that she didn't think it was worth hanging on to Lauren Filer. So that's... I think if there's a theme from this week, Sid, it's probably the kind of ruthlessness of franchise cricket. And it's something that we're really only just beginning to see in the women's game, I think, because franchise cricket is suddenly growing, the money's growing, what's at stake is growing. And instead of it being a case of kind of people being loyal to players that have played for them before, their national teammates, it's actually all about the money now. It's all about wanting to win, and teams want to do well. And so Heather Knight will go, "Well, I want London Spirit to win, so I have no loyalty to Lauren Filer."
I think we can do better than Lauren Filer, yeah.
Alyssa Healy will go, "Well, I want my team in WPL to do well, so I have no loyalty to T-Mac. I don't care if she is my international vice-captain." And that's what we're seeing here, I think.
Yeah, and the other thing that we've seen overall is we're seeing a huge amount of churn at the lower levels, and actually a lot less at the top. So we've brought up a couple of the big names at the top that are going to be potentially moving. But really at the top, if you look at the bands from last year, Raf, we can put a graphic up on the screen to show this.
Yeah.
That the top kind of three salary bands, teams of are maintaining 60-70% of their players. The bottom salary bands, the lower ones, the players who probably aren't going to play, or might play one or two matches at the most, they're where there's going to be a lot of churn.
Yeah.
This has interesting implications for the draft, doesn't it? Because it means that the draft, we're going to get an exciting first round of the draft, and then everything else after that is going to be like a lot of churn among players that probably aren't going to play.
The ECB have really struggled with the draft ever since the first one. I remember talking about it on the podcast a few years ago, it just being a total flop, basically. And they've never quite managed to get that feeling in the 100 draft, particularly for the women's competition, that there's not been that excitement that there is with other drafts in other franchise competitions. And so I just really do worry that this one's going to be another flop, as you say, because it's all going to be you know, Charles Dagnall going. Just
trying to make Chloe Brewer's new contract to be the 12th man. I mean, Sutherland, that sounded horrendously personal. I think against Chloe Brewer, but she's one of the players that's been let go, and she presumably will get picked up somewhere else. But you know, it's not going to make the headlines, and Charles Dagnall's going to struggle to make that sound exciting.
And it's going to be times 20, yeah. And that's going to go on for probably 2 hours if previous drafts are anything to go by. Yeah, so no, I totally get that. There were just in terms of kind of continuing on that loyalty theme, there were a few sort of local players kind of let go by teams I was a bit surprised at, particularly the one that I'd identified was Eve Jones at the Phoenix, who's obviously the kind of the local captain, and has been let go. Hasn't kind of like ripped up the 100, but hasn't been bad either. So that's been, that was a bit weird.
It remains a case of like a lack of loyalty to one of your key local players there. So
yeah, and similarly with, I don't know, somebody like Amy Campbell at the Originals, who's obviously kind of a Thunder player, and that a bit weird, like just very, very kind of ruthless.
Grace Scrivens as well, also the regional captain, been let go by the kind of, the equivalent 100 side.
Yeah, and I guess in some cases it is kind of different personnel, like different coaching staff who are just very focused on this one tournament, and they're not bothered about what happens to the players the rest of the year. But it's hard for the players. Deandra Dotton and Lizelle Lee have both been let go by their respective teams. Now, we talked previously in both of those cases about the risks of being a freelancer on the franchise circuit. Will Dotton get picked up again? It might depend on where she prices herself.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance that potentially she gets picked up if she prices herself reasonably low. But, you know, there aren't that many overseas spots available, because we're only talking about three. It's not like the WPL where people were able to pick up, you know, five players for three spots. Yeah. They're not even doing that. So you've got your three players.
Yeah,
there's a good chance that
that's the end of your career, I'm afraid. It is ruthless from that perspective as well. Now, the other thing that's interesting, Sid, no Indians retained.
Yeah, so they've
Harmanpreet, Smriti, Rodrigues, Risha Ghosh, none of them retained. Yeah, what's going
on? Well, we don't know the answer.
We can speculate, though. We do a lot of that on the Cricket Hurl Weekly. We do a lot of speculation.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is that even if you get a top band A contract in the 100, that's a fraction of what these players are being paid in WPL, and maybe they'd prefer to go on a holiday. You know, if you're Smriti Mandana and you've just earned, you know, the best part of £500,000 in the WPL, you might want to go and, you know, put your feet up with your family in Seychelles rather than going to Southampton for a month.
Yeah, and pressure massively on the ECB to up those salary bands then, those top salary bands, potentially.
Because
they want the best women in the competition, and sounds like they ain't got four of them coming.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see what happens in the draft.
Absolutely. Okay, so that's the 100. Now, kind of sort of related to that, actually, but also more generally about women's domestic cricket and Project Darwin, Sid, we've had a statement from Kent this week, actually from the CEO, Simon Storey, who's put a sort of club update on the website, so it's public, just talking about Kent's plans for the next few years, basically. Okay. And he does talk about the 100, because Beckenham has been kind of touted as a potential venue for a third London team in the 100.
Okay.
And you're a bit sceptical about that.
Well, I mean, they seem to be thinking that they're a shoo-in for a third team in the 100, which just like, I mean, the very most we've heard anyone suggest is there might be two more teams in the 100. And the thing is that Durham also think they're a shoo-in. And Somerset also think they're a shoo-in.
Well, yeah.
So 3-2 doesn't quite go. I mean, maybe we're going to get a joint bid between Durham and Kent. You never know, Raf. They can host it somewhere in the middle.
Doesn't quite work, does it? But they're obviously really pursuing this Beckenham angle. Mm-hmm. Another quote, we're giving serious consideration to submitting a tier one bid with Beckenham at its heart.
Yeah, so this is for the domestic women's competition. Yeah. Now, Beckenham definitely is a trump card in that, because of all of the kind of outgrounds throughout the entire, you know, throughout cricket in this country, Beckenham is probably the best of those non-primary grounds. It is a good ground. It's a good ground to play. It's a good surface. It's got proper spectator facilities. They're talking about extending that. So that's all really positive. But there was a but, wasn't there?
There certainly was. Shall I just read the quote? Yeah. It's quite fun. Or kind of also infuriating at the same time. If we're to submit a bid, we'll need the financial support of commercial partners, cricket fans, benefactors, and anyone who believes that every boy and girl growing up in Kent deserves an equal opportunity to become a professional cricketer, represent their home county of Kent, and potentially go on to play for England. If you share our vision and want to express support for our prospective bid, or know anyone that might be able to provide financial support, do please reach out to me. So this is essentially...
Now, I think I dropped sixpence down the back here, Raph, if I can just, I'll just pick that up now and go and send that to them.
You're going to be one of the benefactors that he's yeah. looking for. This is rather... Well, first of all, I do think that the whole thing is odd. And I also think it's against the spirit of the whole process, of what the ECB want the whole process to look like. So I hope that this counts against Kent in the whole process. If indeed they do go on to submit a bid, which doesn't seem to be a sure thing at the moment, because apparently they're reliant on random people ringing them up going, yeah, I'll donate to your bid for a tier one team. The idea is meant to be that the counties invest money that they have into women's cricket. The idea is not meant to be that counties set up the equivalent of a GoFundMe page for people to give them a bit of money so that they can then go, oh yeah, that's our bid. We've got Tup and Take Me coming from Sid Egan in Winnersh.
Well, I mean, the Kent get £1 million a year from yes. the ECB for not having 100 franchises.
Yeah, you want to know what they spend that on, Sid?
What do they spend it on?
Men's cricket.
Hmm.
So what they're effectively saying is we are not going to, or we refuse to spend any of our existing revenue.
We can't spend our own money on
women's cricket. That would be an outrageous thing to ask us to do. So please, you know, if we're going to submit one of these tier one bids, which, you know, we do really want to do, then we just need people to donate to the cause. And it's like, no, that is not how this whole process is meant to work. It's just totally against the spirit of it. So it's made me a bit cross, I'm afraid.
Oh dear. And I say oh dear, knowing what's about to come up, because Raph, and finally this week.
something else has made
so some
cross.
Months ago the ECB made a big noise yeah. about they announced all the fixtures for the women's internationals next year. They announced yes. them alongside the men's fixtures.
Yeah.
And we've been used in the past to the women's fixtures being announced 5 minutes before they took place. Sometimes almost not an exaggeration. But they announced them with loads and loads of notice.
Yeah.
So the most fervent fans went and bought tickets. People booked hotel rooms. And now what's happened this week, Raph?
Yeah. So again, this has made me very cross. So the ODI, England v New Zealand, at Worcester, has been moved from the Saturday the 29th of June to the Sunday the 30th of June because of a clash with the men's T20 World Cup final that's taking place hundreds of miles away. And the reason why this has made me cross is because the whole point of announcing the fixtures months in advance is meant to be that it puts fans of women's cricket on an equal footing with fans of men's cricket, because we can make plans. And you know,
and you had made plans, right, Raph?
Yes.
You're taking a party of members of
yes.
our friends at the Cricket Society.
Yes, exactly. We are going to hopefully experience hospitality at Worcester and have a really nice day at the women's cricket. And now people who have bought tickets for that and made arrangements are having to rejig the whole thing, and some of them won't be able to make it. So it's very frustrating, because from a fan perspective, it basically the ECB are saying we don't really care that people have made plans. Now, I do have a little bit of inside information here. Because of planning this day at the women's cricket, Worcestershire gave me a ring on Tuesday morning when it was announced, and they said, we're really sorry, but we had to move it because the ECB put pressure on us. We didn't want to. We pushed back. We said that we didn't think this was necessary, and the ECB made us move it. Okay, so that's it's coming from the ECB. So basically what's going on here is that the ECB are putting a hypothetical match. So potentially the England men's team may end up in this World Cup final, but they may well not. So a complete hypothetical is taking precedence over a real match that's happening in England.
And one that they'd already sold tickets for.
One that they'd already sold tickets for.
And people had booked hotel rooms.
Yeah, they're assuming that people will stay at home to watch a potential men's team in the final on the telly rather than going out to watch this England women's match. I mean, that's crappy because it's making an assumption that people will prioritise men's cricket. It's also assuming that the fan base for both is the same, which it clearly isn't. And you also just go, well, would you ever do that in the case of if it was a men's ODI that you were hosting and there was a women's World Cup final happening elsewhere? I don't think so. Also, they've now moved it so that it clashes with Sunday Rachel Hayhoe fixtures.
Okay.
So that's infuriating as well, because again, it's about assuming that that fan base is more bothered about a men's World Cup final than about domestic women's cricket fixtures. So all round, I think it's really poor form of the ECB and a really big mistake.
Okay, and on that bombshell.
Thank you everybody for tuning in. Let's see whether I'm this angry this time next week. See you then.
Bye.